Journey into the Bible and explore its hidden text and rich wisdom. Join Adil Kazilski Mondays at 1 p.m. for the trip of a lifetime.
Shavua Tov, and welcome to 101.9 Chai FM. I'm Adil Kazilski, and I'm doing my favorite every single week, sitting with you and learning a little bit of Torah. And in fact, we come to a very, very interesting part of the Torah, and I'm going to be pausing here because I want to do some critical analysis and an understanding overall, some ideas about what we are learning. And for those that are following in every single week, you know that we're in the Parsha of Yitro. We're in Exodus chapter 20. And that is where, famously, the Jews receive the Ten Commandments. Now, while one may go and look at the Ten Commandments just as an overall nicety, and this is the way that, you know, the world should run, and this is like just common sense, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, the truth of the matter is that the Ten Commandments is the fundamental of absolutely everything that a Jew should connect himself to. And so it behooves us that we actually understand it in a much, much greater context, and we understand it from many, many aspects. And so before we get into the ideas around each and every single one of the commandments, which is probably going to take us the entire year to get through, because there's so much to learn in each and every single verse, and there's so much critical analysis we can go through to understand why the Torah says to us this and why it says to us that and everything in between. I want to look at it overall and try to explain to you that that this was probably the most fundamental change that has happened to the world. You know, we look at different generations, we look at different areas, and we see how, for example, the Industrial Revolution revolutionized the world. Example, the printing press was a huge thing. Electricity. Similarly, the giving of the Torah changed the way that the world interacts with itself, the people within it, with each other, and more fundamentally, the way the world and the people and Jews in particularly communicate and function to God. It answers a lot of questions of why are we here? What is our purpose? What should we be doing? Et cetera, et cetera. So I ask that you bear with me, and we are going to go through all of these ideas and just pick up certain ones and then eventually get to the point where we'll be able to start learning each and every single verse and understanding it from that perspective. So we know, as we've been speaking in previous podcasts and on the show, that the Jews came to a place called Mount Sinai. It's in the Sinai Peninsula. They arrived there on the 1st of Sivan in the year 2448, which, for those who want a historical context, it was May 13th in the year 1313 before the Common Era, 1313 BCE, on the 9th of May. Now, the famous Kabbalist Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says the following parable. He says, a king's son was very sick, and when he recovered, the king's servant suggested that the king was now old enough to be given a tutor, to which the king replied, this child, the prince, has still not regained his normal healthy glow. I would like him to convalesce for 2 or 3 months. Let him eat and drink and become completely well before he begins to learn. That is the mashal. That is the parable that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai gives. What is the nimshal? What is the explanation to the parable? That we know that in Egypt, the Jewish people were similarly downtrodden. They were depressed from all the harsh labor with the bricks and the mortar. And as soon as they left Egypt, We are told that the angels came to God and said to God, "The time has come to give the Torah." To which God replied, "No, not yet. First, let the Jewish people convalesce from their subjugation in Egypt. Let them eat the manna. Let them drink the pure water from Miriam's well. Let them also eat the fat quail. And then we'll be ready for them, we'll be ready for me to give them the Torah." So during this intervening period, God wanted the Israelites to purify themselves, their physical beings. He wanted them to nourish themselves, to rehabilitate themselves. And also, obviously, they were eating this highly spiritual manna, and that would give them time to attain a level of perfection that they needed in order to receive the Torah. And that's why, if you look before the Exodus, God says, he says to Moses, "When you bring the people out of Egypt, you will all become God's servants on this mountain." You can go back and look at it. It was in chapter 3, verse 12. That was the quote that God says to Moses, "When you bring the people out of Egypt, you will all become servants to God on this mountain." This is when Moses was standing by the burning bush. Now, why did God not say, "When you bring the people out of the land of Egypt"? Why does God say, "out of Egypt"? Okay. Well, for a few reasons. If God had said that he would give the Torah after the Israelites left the land of Egypt, then Moses would have assumed that God would do so immediately after the Exodus. Okay. He was trying to say something more. What God was trying to say is that they were unable to receive the Torah until they had completely removed themselves from Egypt and everything that it represented to them. Because as long as the Jews felt the weariness of slavery, as long as they felt that they could be subjugated again by Pharaoh, as long as they felt that they still had PTSD from the time of their time in Egypt, they were not ready to receive the Torah. So Moses understood that there would have to be a waiting period between the Exodus and the giving of the Torah. And that's where we get the understanding of the moshel, of the parable that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai gets. Because we're like the royal prince who got ill. Now, the sickness that we came out of Egypt with wasn't only physical, because you can fix up physical illness quite quickly. Okay? The sickness was a spiritual illness. They, number one, had gone through a lot of trauma in their lives. They'd also done some not good things. They'd done a lot of evil deeds that they'd learned from the Egyptians all the years that they were there. Because a lot of the Israelites that were born in Egypt, and that's where they grew up, those are the people that we're talking to now. Also, their minds had been affected. Why? Because when one is pushed through harsh, mind-dulling work, then you become completely, completely insensitive. So what God did is he said, "I'm delaying the giving of the Torah, and there's going to be a period of rehabilitation." Some of the rehabilitation is that they had to see the splitting of the sea. The splitting of the sea showed that Egypt was not going to come chase them again. Because once Pharaoh and all his chariots died, that was the end of that. They also had to go and see the destruction of Amalek. Okay, and that's how they slowly healed. Now, what's interesting is that we're told that before they left Egypt, they were on the 50th level of debasement, of immorality, where they almost could not be saved. And what we see is that there's 50 days between the going out of Egypt and the coming out The coming to the coming out of Egypt and receiving the Torah was also a 50-day period. And so we climbed 50 gates of purity. We were in the 50th gate of impurity. We had to reverse all our psychological, mental, emotional, and physical trauma that we had in order to prepare ourselves for the receiving of the Torah.
This is Mystical Text with Adil Kazilski.
Welcome back. And so we were discussing just before the break that it was important that the Jews went through a process of healing. And I want to pause here because I think that even though it has a lot of relevance to and understand, we understand it, why now there was this period between the coming out of Egypt and the giving of the Torah, that we know that Torah is timeless and it teaches us even today lessons that we can learn and live by. I was listening to a podcast earlier this morning of a letter that was written by a woman who had lost her job. And she was writing a letter to the Lubavitcher Rebbe, asking advice, bemoaning and just saying what a very difficult place that she was in. And there was a lot of stuff that you could learn from the letter, but I want to bring out one point. And that was that the Rebbe explained that life is cyclical. We do not live a linear life. It looks like we live a linear life, that we're one and then we're five and then we're 10 and then we're 20 and 30 and 50 and on, and we get to 120 and we die. But life doesn't work in a linear fashion. Life works more with ebbs and flows, with diversions and distractions, and sometimes things that we see that tend to be negative, like in this case, the woman losing a job, like in the case of the Jewish people in Egypt who were being so subjugated. They were there in order to push us forward and find a different path, or a better path, or a more expansive path. Very, very interestingly, I read a quote, I hope I'm going to say it correctly, that I read just the other day. It said, you always ask God to change your situation, but maybe it's a situation that God is asking you for you to change. Okay? Again, we always are praying for God to change the situation, but maybe it is that God has put us in the situation so that we may change. Now, this whole story of the giving of the Torah and having that this 50-a-day hiatus where we went through certain physical changes, we could see the splitting of the sea, the destruction of Amalek, and we actually came to a place where we united as a people. We needed to heal. We needed to take a step now in a different direction. And I think that speaks a lot to us, whether it is like this woman that I'm just speaking about that lost a job. One of the things that the Lubavitcher Rebbe said, that this is a hiatus in your growth. You see it as something negative, and practically it appears that way. But it's there, it's the impetus that the situation must change and something greater, bigger, wider, more expansive can happen. The same thing with us. If we actually look at what is going on in the world today, it looks like we went through a, and not looks like, we did go through a, and are still going through a very, very difficult, anxious time with regard to Israel, with regard to anti-Semitism, with regard to many, many personal problems that all of us have, each to his own. If we sit and we just bemoan it, we will remain in our Egypt. We will remain in our limitations. We will remain imprisoned in the situation that we find. But maybe, perhaps, Maybe, perhaps, what we can look at is that all of these things are happening because the world is changing direction. I certainly believe that. I believe that the world is birthing the messianic process. We are going to see a world of goodness, of kindness, of health, of peace amongst entire humanity. That is the Jewish viewpoint of our Messiah. But in order for us to get through it, we actually have to break down that which the situations that we find ourselves in, and we have to work through, we have to heal, we have to look and we have to work through and heal who we really are. I believe we're in the healing phase. We've had a lot of trauma, we've had a lot of anxiety, we've had a lot of hurt, we've had a lot of pressure from different places that maybe 30 years ago, none of us would have actually ever dreamt that we'd find ourselves in the situation we find ourselves today. But like the Jews coming out of Egypt, they needed to leave Egypt mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually, and prepare themselves for the revelation of godliness, which was, again, as I said, a fundamental change in the way that the world works and sees itself. And this is something that we need to take in our own personal lives. If we do find ourselves in a difficult situation where, you know, we feel we can't extricate ourselves, or we're finding a place where we are coming out of a very negative place, know that there needs to be a time to heal. We need to ask questions. And we need to take that adage that I've said, that maybe instead of asking Hashem to change the situation, it's Hashem asking us in the situation to change ourselves. And that, I believe, is the call for today. So this is where we go now and look at the giving of the Torah as a healing to the world. But we had to be ready for that revelation. We couldn't just take it on face value. Now, in order for something important to be accomplished, we need to have six conditions also that take part in creating a fundamental change. The first is that the time has to be right. We know that many ventures are successful when the time is right, where similar ventures fail when the time is not correct. So you need to have the timing to be right. The person has to be mature enough. Things have to align in order for something to be successful. Now, let's look at the timing of the giving of the Torah. We know that it was in the third month of the Exodus. We now understand that the Israelites had had time to recover from all their illnesses, from all their infirmities, both physical and spiritual. And the timing was such that it was now right because they had gone through a healing process. So time is always important. And this is, again, something that we tend to fail so many times. We want things to hurry up and we want things to move along at a much, much quicker rate than perhaps we need to hold back and say, we need to give time. We need, the time has to be right when things have come together that we can move forward or look at something different, be something different, do something different. The time has to be right. The second condition is that the place has to be right, okay? Here we obviously see, and we learned in the last couple of shows, that the place was Mount Sinai. It became a holy place. It also was in a desert. It took away the distractions of a crazy city life or a bustling metropolis. There was silence there. The place was the place allowed the Jewish people to sanctify themselves and allow themselves to be fit to receive the Torah. So you've got to have the right place, not only the right time. Okay? A very fundamental part of change is that the person themselves has to be right. Okay? There can be times when you'll have the right time for a business to start, for example, and it's in the right place, but the person themselves is not right. Maybe their mind isn't calm. Maybe they have a worry occupying their mind. Maybe they cannot concentrate on what they are doing. And we can see this again in the giving of the Torah. All the times that we see the wanderings in the deserts, the Jews were fighting with themselves constantly. Okay, at one point in time, they said, let's appoint a leader and go back to Egypt. And all the time, we see whenever they're moving around, the Torah is describing them correctly in the plural. It says, they yis'u, and they camped. They yachanu, and they yis'u, and they traveled. They yachanu, and they camped. Why? Because the plural is indicating that the Jewish people were not united, that they were not acting in concert. And truthfully, that lack of unity didn't allow them to be worthy of receiving the Torah. Why? Because the Torah is the Torah is called peace. Okay? It says, Derechecha darchei noam, unetzivosecha shalom, that its ways are pleasant ways, and all its paths are peace. Now, if all the Israelites were at peace with each other, then the Torah would have been given. But there wasn't. There was a lot of strife. And they went through Rephidim, which we know was a place where there was a lot of strife. But by the time they come to Har Sinai, it says here, Vayichan, that he encamped. And you remember we went and said, by the time they got to Har Sinai, the place was right, the time was right, and eventually now the people, the person, the individuals involved in the story were right, because now it says it in the singular, and he encamped, meaning the Israelites were living in peace and in unity. And that's when the Torah was able to be given. Again, let's apply it to us now. Okay. Probably the most important thing right now for us is to remain in a state of unity, to remain together. We saw a tremendous pouring out of Achdut, of unity, since October 7th. Slowly now, because it's been dragging for so long, we're starting to see wear and tear again and people coming at each other again. And we shouldn't be doing that. We should still maintain the wear and tear that is happening. That happened, we should take it away, and we should maintain the peace that we put together, the unity we put together on the 7th of October, that which we saw, we should keep on working at it. That doesn't mean that you and I have to be the same. It doesn't mean that we don't have a difference of opinion. It doesn't mean that I'm Ashkenazi and you're Sephardi, or I'm American and you're South African, or I'm whatever it is, whatever we put on judgment on the way people are. The bottom line is that there still should be and must be an underlying unity amongst the Jewish people. So that's the third condition. So we've got the time, the place, and the person. The other thing is that when we want big things to happen, we have to have proper intermediaries. Okay, people that have insight that can and sensitivity to deliver messages from one side to another. And that's why when we look at a country, we don't just have one person. We have a government. We have many ministers, etc., etc. Okay, at the giving of the Torah, who was the intermediary? It was Moses. Okay, Moses was the liaison, if I could say, between heaven and earth. We were bringing now together two concepts. Heaven is heaven, earth is earth. And what we are going to understand from the giving of the Torah is that the two are going to come together. And we needed an intermediary between the two. The fifth is that not only must there be a proper intermediary, but the intermediary obviously must be able to speak, must be able to communicate to people in a proper manner, okay, which that's what Moses did. And the sixth is that to remind each side about the good that has already happened to them, to kind of like make shalom between the two. And that's why he says, and these are the verses that we learned before, where God says, you have seen what I've done in Egypt. That's recalling all the good that Hashem had done for us, reminding people of all the goodness that he has done. And then he goes and says, you are a nation, a special nation, Mamlechet Kohanim v'goy Kadosh. You're a kingdom of priests. You're a holy nation. Okay? And that is Moses doing the job of making sure that heaven and earth is reconciled, that the Jews understand that they have a responsibility and they have a purpose, and they are going to be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. And that's what they're bringing to the party. And at the same time, he's reminding us of what God has done to us and how he took us out of Egypt and how he split the sea. That is the art of bringing two disparate things together. We have to have the right time, the right place, the right people, and then the intermediary that is able to negotiate and bring this entire thing together. Again, a very, very important lesson for us today. We don't need leaders amongst us that are causing conflict and fighting a disparity amongst the Jewish people. That's not what we need. We need people who are motivating us and who are bringing us together and showing us that all our differences that we do have are actually a good thing, because each and every one of us can be unique and we can bring something positive to the world. I think this idea is beyond powerful. I'd love to know your opinion. Do you agree? Do you disagree? Do you resonate? Do you not believe that it's possible? Would love to hear your comments. The SMS line is 34519. The WhatsApp number is 061-895-1019. This is 101.9 Chai FM.
This is Mystical Text with Adel Kazilski.
Welcome back. So we've covered one idea. I want to now show you why the Torah was given in the month of Sivan, which is the third month, as we know, from the giving of the Torah. We have Nisan, Iyar, Sivan. Now, the astrological sign, the mazel, for Sivan is Gemini. Gemini, which is symbolic of the twins, the Tu'umim. This whole astrological sign has great significance. And the reason why is that the Torah was given particularly in the month of Sivan, because if the nations of the world came to complain if the Torah had given to me, I would have kept it, we will go back and say, this is why the Torah was given in Sivan. Let me explain. It is as if God is saying, Jacob and Esav, Yaakov and Esav, were twins. Now, the original plan was that both Yaakov and Esav were going to be our third and fourth forefather. You can ask the question, why do we have three forefathers and four foremothers? It should have been four forefathers and four foremothers. Truthfully, for those that have been hanging around for a long time, you will know that we learned that Leah was supposed to marry Esav. Rachel was supposed to marry Yaakov. So what happened? Esav lost the plot. Esav, through his own personal choices, chose to throw off the mantle of responsibility, chose to lead his life in a way that was contrary to Torah. And so what happened was that Yaakov, his brother, his younger brother, had to step in and fulfill the purpose and the responsibility of both himself and his brother Esau. So Jacob marries both Rachel and Leah. Now, it says that, by the way, at the end of time, that Esau will come around and he will reestablish himself as a positive character in the Jewish people. And dare I say that right now Esau represents for us on a global level the Christian world. Okay, we generally are divided up into the Christian world, the Arab world, and the Jewish world. Okay, and those three worlds are representative by Abraham, which is the Jewish people, Esav, which is the world of Christianity, and we have Yishmael, which is the Arab world. And there's been a lot of tension and a lot of fighting throughout all the centuries. But at the end of days, at the end of time, just like in the Bible, we see that Esau comes to meet Yaakov, okay? And he says to Yaakov, come with me. Let's go back to the land of Israel and let's settle it together. Yaakov says to Esau, you go ahead. I will meet you because I have young children. I have flocks. I have women. I'll catch up to you. And if you look amongst the commentators there, we are told that what Yaakov was really saying is that the Jewish people now had a lot of work to do in the world because Esau did not fulfill his function, and that we will meet them again at the end of days, at the end of times, we will come together. I ask you, you can answer it yourself. Are you not seeing that happening before your eyes today, where we are seeing now the leader of the free world and a lot of governments now turning around, being far, far more right-winged, far more conservative, far more pro-Judaism, and they are following up. They're starting to birth this process. So coming back now to the month of Sivan, right, when we said that the twins, Jacob and Esau, were supposed to do things in equal partnership, we're told that when Jacob and Esau divided the months between them, Yaakov took the months of Nisan and Iyar, which is the coming out of Egypt, and then the healing time afterwards. Esav took the months of Tammuz and Av, says the Midrash. Tammuz and Av are the low times of the Jewish people. That's where we suffered the worst tragedies as a result of our sins, and the genius and the angel of Esav being particularly powerful during these months. So while we are now in a very, very powerful time where the Jews' muzzle is very, very strong, we know when it comes to Tammuz and to Av, where we have the fast of Yud Zayin Tammuz that culminates eventually in Tisha B'Av, that is a time of negativity for the Jewish people and an up for Esav. But when it came to the month of Sivan, the month of Sivan didn't go to either of them. But truthfully, it belonged as a partnership. And that is why the month of Sivan, the astrological sign for it, is Gemini, is twins, right? Why? Because we know when two people are born together, they're called twins, because the term twin can denote anything involving a partnership. So the final ownership of Sivan remained undecided. If Israel accepted the Torah, then the month would be theirs. If not, it would belong to Esau. But as soon as the Jews accepted the Torah, the month became theirs. And as long as Esau remained evil, he had no part in the month. So Again, we see over here, and we know that in other midrashic sources, it talks about the fact that the Torah was offered to the other nations of the world, and they all rejected it. One didn't want it because it said, "Do not steal," and they that's what they did all day long. Others said, "Do not murder," and that's what they did all day long. Okay, it was only the Jews, when the Torah was provided, was offered to us, that we went and said the words, "Naaseh v'nishma," we will do and we will hear. So that is why we have the symbol of the twins. It was the Jews that accepted the Torah. However, we can go and say that Esav rejected it, and therefore it belongs to us. But nevertheless, there's going to become a time when the Torah will be for all people, Jew and non-Jew alike. It's very interesting to note that the Jewish view of Messianism, we're not going to go out and convert anybody. We're not going to go out and kill anybody that's an infidel. We believe in a peaceful messianic process where Jew and Gentile live together in mutual respect, peace, and harmony. And that is fundamental to who we are. Finally, we're told that the Jews moved from a place called Rephidim. We've spoken about this before. Rephidim has the same letters as the word Peridim, which means separation. What we've seen now, and this is symbolic of the twins again, is that when the Israelites moved from Rephidim, meaning they moved away from the bad trait of being discontent with each other, and we all became unified, and we started loving each other as if we had a single heart, that showed that we now loved almost like a twin. We saw each other's person as ourselves. Because what is an identical twin? An identical twin is that we look exactly the same. Okay? And many times deep inside, we behave the very same. So this is something that is important when we look at the symbolism around why it was given in the third month and why the astrological sign for it is twins. This is 101.9 High FM.
This is Mystical Text with Adel Kazilski.
I want to add in one more thing before we close for today. What brings this unity? Basically, jealousy, competition. What happens in this world? Every individual wants to have more status than the next person. Everybody wants to consider himself more important. And when a person is not shown proper respect, he becomes angry, and that starts controversy, that starts fight, and all respect is lost. Okay? That is how the Jews had to heal themselves. All right. They had to heal themselves by getting rid of all the external paradigms that they had formed that made them different from another person, to the point where they were in a point of strife. That's again why, when they stopped seeking status, they stopped having any hatred and strife between them. And they started living in peace like brothers. We have the word Vayichan, and he encamped. There was unity. Also, one very, very interesting thing is that we're told in the Midrash that when they came to Har Sinai, they were initially very puzzled. Like, they said, why is God giving us the Torah on such a low mountain? Shouldn't it be that if we're receiving the greatest gift of the Torah, the Torah should be given on the greatest, biggest, highest mountain in the world? And what was the message there? Message was there, as we all know, is that God hates pride. He wants people to be aware of their own insignificance. And therefore, we received the Torah on Har Sinai, a lowly, insignificant mountain in the middle of a desert. Because as soon as people realized and they gained a great measure of humility and they stopped trying to seek honor and recognition. All strife evaporated, they became as one, and we were ripe and ready for the revelation of the Torah. Again, a very powerful lesson for us today. We can and should bring our individual gifts to the world, but it must be done with a underpinning attitude of peace, love, and respect. Once somebody thinks that he's better than the other, or that somebody doesn't have a right to exist other than the other, then we're in big trouble. That's where I'm going to leave you today. There's a lot to think about, and we will continue again, please God, next week. Shavua Tov. This is Adel Kozelski, 101.9 Chai FM.